friends and family, it's time for Mio Ayo, a safe place for self-discovery. Here is your host, owner of Mio Ayo Counseling Services, Christy Shaw.
Hello, everyone. My name is Christy Shaw, and I am your host for our podcast, Mio Ayo, Improve in Health. And I am joined by my wonderful co-host, Will. How are you doing today?
Doing very, very well, Christy. Welcome back to Okunis Podcast Production Studios.
Thank you for having me again.
We had a nice little episode, a nice little shot from your office last episode. That was such a nice environment.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Nice. I'm really glad to have that space for people that are in the Fort Capel area. A little bit easier access, I'm hoping, for those. And I guess it's File Hills, right?
Yeah.
File Hills community. And if anybody needs to get in touch with me, please feel free to reach me on MIOIA website.
What are we talking about today?
Today, we are going to talk about something that is kind of scary, as always, but also, I think, kind of fun. And also something that we all are faced with in different parts of our lives. It's a little bit about communication style, but it's going to go a little bit more in depth in terms of what our attachment style is in relationship to our communication style. And maybe I'll just do a little quick review of what attachment style is.
Okay.
Our attachment style is developed in our childhood with our primary caregivers. So oftentimes it's our mothers, maybe our grandmothers, our aunties, whoever is our first caregiver when we come into this world. And what that can influence in our adulthood are the types of relationships that we are drawn to in adulthood, because it's a sense of normalcy. And when you have an attachment style, the first one, which is the ideal, I guess, situation, is where you feel secure, where you can vocalize your needs, your wants, and that your needs and your wants and your feelings are acknowledged and listened to. And of course, you know, as we're growing up as children and as toddlers, maybe when we're infants, that's a little bit easier for our parents and our caregivers to meet those needs. And kind of as we grow older, things kind of change a little bit, right? We get more independent. However, when it changes, sometimes that can cause a little bit of confusion before we're ready to have that independence. Okay. So I think, you know, when I was a kid, my mom would often say, she raised me very young to be very independent. Okay. So when I'd have a need, she would say something like, do it yourself, right? Like, okay, tie your shoes, do it yourself. I think that's common with,
sure,
a lot of us, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think our parents and our caregivers wanted us to be independent and to kind of teach us what the real world was like, to try to prepare us, not make us too soft.
Yeah.
However, sometimes, again, if it's too early, before we have the confidence to do those things,
I see. Okay. Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
That can cause us a little bit of insecurity.
Right.
So there's a couple other attachment styles, one of them being, now we move from secure to the insecure attachment styles. So avoidant, which basically means that you're kind of afraid to engage with your parent or your partner in adulthood. It's like they're there, but not emotionally available.
Okay.
There's a bit,
okay,
of a disconnect
now,
there.
Now, I read through this before we went on the air.
Yes.
And the avoidance kind of resonated with me, the avoidant and then disorganized and anxious, and not the secure. Mm-hmm. And now, what you're saying is these are four types because of resulting of how you were brought up or how your caregiver cared for you, I guess, in just a layman's term, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly.
I'm catching up here because the avoidance is like, the first one was emotionally distant. I'm not sure. But then prefers individuality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't depend on a partner. Mm-hmm. Avoiding conflict and logical. All three of the ones are like, bing, bing, bing. It's like, hey, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So again, what we're saying is this is a result of how your caregiver, well, I guess,
raised you and interacted with you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. How the communication between you and your caregiver, what it looked like in childhood.
Right.
Right. And then if you think about too, that parents that have more than one child, of course, they're not going to be able to interact with your every single need every day when you've got five or six or more kids. Right.
Right? Yeah.
So there's going to be times where you're going to feel frustrated as a little one, not having your needs met. Right. And so how that can carry into adulthood, and I think a lot of people have started to hear this term, it's called parentified. It's where you had to grow into a parent taking care of other siblings or sometimes taking care of your parent.
Yeah, I see.
So that would fall under that avoidant type of attachment style and communication style, which means you're kind of avoidant of being direct. Because if you've had to take care of your parent, you cross this line into not really having any more needs. You're kind of taking care of other people now at this stage. So you've learned to kind of dismiss your needs because it was more important for you to maybe wash the dishes or to help with laundry or to take care of your siblings. So your needs for maybe alone time or love and attention and affection were dismissed, and you kind of put them to the side because it was more important that we maybe deal with a crisis situation, right? Where there's kids running around or somebody's taken off or your sibling's about to jump off of something, mm-hmm. right? So you're constantly putting your own needs down for that of others. and then we'll add in the next layer, which will be more of like how we communicate in these ways, which I think as we kind of flesh this out, it'll start to kind of make take some shape. The next one is anxious. So this is another insecure attachment.
Now, are these four on any scale?
On any scale? Like, what do you mean by that?
Depending on it's almost like the disorganized. Yeah, I was there. And then I went from there to avoid into anxious and then into secure.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Is there any levels? Yeah. Okay. For sure. There's definitely some fluidity between them, right?
Yeah. So anxious again. This is an interesting one because it's not so much a fear of partner leaving, but I can understand where that would come from.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. So fear of partner leaving, of course, fear of a parent leaving. Again, this is a little bit of that parentified version, right?
Yeah.
Which is if your parent had to leave for work or went out every weekend or is at bingo all the time, they're kind of always leaving. Again, your needs are that you need to feel secure that they're going to come back. If you don't know, oftentimes our parents didn't tell us. We had no idea, right? Mm-hmm. Like it could be a few hours, it could be overnight. So there's lots of these varying degrees, I guess, of children maybe feeling abandoned, but maybe not totally abandoned, right? And maybe in some instances they were, right? They were abandoned and they had to go into the care of other parents.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. Or other caregivers or aunties or uncles or grandparents, right?
Or it could be just a small thing for a child,
mm-hmm.
right? Just even just an overnight without saying where you were.
Totally.
Right?
Totally. And I think we do, even for me, I have to remind myself, man, I got to remember to tell my kiddo what's going on because I'm just going because I've got my plan of tasks or we're going grocery shopping and you're going to stay at your auntie's for a few hours and then you're going to come back. Like I'm just going and I don't really tell her what's going on. So it's just another learning experience. The anxiousness is lacks personal boundaries and always shifting moods and is highly sensitive. So when that happens, sometimes we start to, display certain characteristics. So that way we're just trying to get our parent or our connection or our partner to see us and see us and I guess respond to that anxiousness. And so we might display different forms of needs, which one works, right? Which one will get our attention or will get their attention? So maybe it's about displaying when we're feeling sick or maybe sharing about when we're in a crisis situation, trying to get our partner to meet our needs in all these different ways. And that's why I think with that always that shifting of moods from when we have that attention, we feel secure. A sense of security, right?
Yeah.
As soon as something shifts, then we start to feel that anxious and that anxiety again, that something's wrong, you know, and that we need to fix it or what did we do wrong this time? And we start to reflect internally in figuring out how can we, I guess, be what they need or be what they want so that way they'll spend more time with us.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The last one is disorganized. And this is often what happens when children are maybe have different multiple primary caregivers in their 0 to 5 age. Children who maybe had to kind of go back and forth between different caregivers, their aunties or grandparents, you know, their mom, their dad, you know, a lot of varying changes quite frequently between 0 to 5 is going to influence this attachment style into adulthood. And so what that means in terms of their communication is their emotions can be very messy. There's unresolved trauma, which can resurface often. They're often feeling angered and aggressive behaviors, and they also lack empathy. And again, if you think about, always reverse or invert these, how can a child develop what empathy is if they're not shown what empathy yes. is, right? Yeah. So, yeah, these are all just kind of a little bit of an overview of what they are. And again, like you had mentioned, there is fluidity mm-hmm. between them. Yeah. You might feel yourself in one way more than other in another way.
Yeah.
And of course, I guess, depending on how much healing you've done, right?
I think that comes down to how much healing you come. Because even if you can almost... if you identify with any of these, obviously, either you're on your healing journey or not, or might mm-hmm. be a red flag to say, well, maybe you need some healing, mm-hmm. you know, and even like the disorganized one, I can identify with all four of these now, mm-hmm. you know, but when I started, it's like, it was a disorganized state is where I realized it, something's not right. And then I was like, oh, that's right. It is wrong. It is. And then again, just putting a light on it, mm-hmm. right? Shining a light on it and meaningful thought and discussions and yeah
mm-hmm.
yeah well when I first read this, is this where you check in on your journey?
Yeah, oftentimes when people are first
and again, even though we're talking about children, I can see these traits in adults as well.
That's right.
And that's the unhealed mm-hmm. part of that adult that they carry around mm-hmm. that they may or may not know that they're reacting or
feeling
it in this way, right?
And what and why,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, and why
that
yeah.
is, I think, the reason why I wanted to share this with people, so that way they don't feel so lost and confused and maybe hopeless. I think about yeah. how they're interacting with their partners, because we're going to reverse it back now to adulthood.
Sure.
Why are we having these conflicts? Why do we keep circling around the same issues without getting any resolution? Why am I feeling triggered when my partner does this? And, because of those trauma triggers in our bodies, sometimes we can start making some decisions really quickly because of how badly we feel on the inside. And because we're operating just out of emotion, if we had a moment to maybe kind of think about it, which is why I'm describing these things here for folks, that way they can maybe logicize it a little bit and understand, okay, is this actually something that is that my partner's doing intentionally to hurt me, or am I being triggered because of my childhood? And those wounds are very deep, right? They trigger us very in a deep way. So it feels very overpowering, I'll say. And once you kind of understand yourself in that mode, it's a lot easier, I find, to figure out, is this me or is it them or is it both of us triggering each other? Because that happens a lot too.
That is true, yeah.
And I guess there's no way really out of that cycle until you understand yours first and foremost, maybe helping your partner shed a little bit of light on theirs. And then I think the other powerful thing I'll say is it stops it from being... the intentionality between hurting one another. It's about, okay, I'm feeling triggered right now because of this. How do you feel? Or are you feeling triggered? Or that's how I'm responding right now. And I'm sorry, I'm going to take accountability for that. And I'm going to go for a walk or think about things for a little bit and take a breather, right? Mm-hmm. So I want this to be empowering for people in their relationships. That way they can maybe navigate themselves out of it rather than cycling into it back and forth.
Yeah. And that's a good rule of thumb, if possible. Mm-hmm. If you can stop and think and take accountability for what you said or what you're thinking about,
mm-hmm.
then that kind of stops that conflict right in its tracks.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Cause I just recently been involved in something like that. And I tried to do a little conflict resolution. And it accidentally got as loud as they did,
mm-hmm.
but they ended up turning away, going different directions.
Yeah.
Which was fine.
Yeah.
But
de-escalating.
Like, if I was in that situation, I could see myself, you know, 5 years ago from 0 to 100, right there. And now it's like I'm glad I have that one little moment of hold on.
Yes.
Again, just a quick pause,
mm-hmm.
right? To see, like, to ask those inner questions. Is it me getting triggered, or am I being triggered by that person, or is that person being triggered by me?
That's right.
Like, that's a new phase that I'm just entering. Like, I'm triggering somebody just mm-hmm. being myself, right? And there's nothing I can do about that.
Mm-hmm.
That's their problem.
That's right.
And again, that's a little farther into what we're discussing. But again, if you have just that moment, just to say, hope, Mm-hmm. That's great. That's a step. That's good. That's empowering.
It is. And the mm-hmm. moment that you get to the recognition part, it gets your brain activated,
yeah.
which, you know, will get your body out of that feeling. So, if you're feeling, you're not thinking, and vice right. versa.
Yeah.
So that's why if any of these words or situations kind of trigger something in your brain, mm-hmm. hopefully that can come up again to help you getting out of that feeling yeah. state.
And in that conflict situation with a partner, if you stop and say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm triggered, I'm going to take a break. That in itself is letting your partner know that, okay, it's not you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And if that was reversed, then I'd be going, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. It's not me. Okay. Go clear your head.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be here when you get back.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah,
definitely.
So the secure attachment, I just want folks to know mm-hmm. and a little bit flesh this out. The secure attachment, which is, I guess, the ideal. So it's an ideal state. Not necessarily yeah. is it always going to be 100% this
yes,
state, but
right.
maybe this is the goal state.
It's nice to spend some time there.
Yeah. yes. Is a secure attachment where it feels warm and caring, trusting and forgiving. We have an appropriate amount of conflict. And what that means is that the relationship is safe enough to bring up things that are bothering you in a safe state, because that is ideal. That if something's hurting me and bothering me, and if I share it with my partner, you know, dependent on how they answer me, mm-hmm. disorganized, avoidant, anxious, right? It's going to either help me to feel more secure, or it's going to help me to feel more insecure in that moment. So how can we, and then of course, on the receiving end of the partner is, do they feel attacked?
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So when you have your needs pushed down all the time, needs and desires pushed down, when somebody comes to you with their needs, your partner, you can feel resentful. Like, excuse me, but I haven't had, you know, a nap, or I haven't had time to myself, and all those things. So you hear that. So then it's also about their needs are not being met. So it's really important, I think, that both partners can understand how important it is that they have their needs and their wants vocalized, not just vocalized, but supported by each partner. Mm-hmm. Because if somebody's always self-sacrificing, that is not good.
No.
It grows resentment, right? And so there's very, like, I mean, I'm just thinking of all of the situations where this yeah. comes up. So that's a big nugget of info, but just for people to, I guess, to be aware of that. And then the next one is that they can manage their emotions well. So again, not being triggered if somebody's bringing something to the attention of their partner, and that they can be honest and open. So that's going to be that does take work, right? To feel like you can share your emotions, your thoughts and your feelings openly and honestly without feeling fear of being judged. Or the one that I hear a lot of in terms of fear. Is that people are worried about being open and honest in their relationships because they don't want their weaknesses to be used against them.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's so true.
Yeah.
That's so true that, that we've done that, or that it's happened to us. And I guess if you're thinking about, your own relationships, maybe if there's one thing that we can, you know, kind of put to the top of the list is, let's not put the things that our partners have shared with us in confidence and use it against them. Because that's really, really wrong. That's a really, yeah. really, that's a very, I don't know, a wound you won't be able to put back together necessarily.
That's right.
Once you cross that line.
Yeah, that's like a breach of trust.
Totally.
Kind of thing, right?
Totally.
It kind of shows your true colors.
Ooh, cuts deep.
True colors, yeah. Saying, oh, that's where you are. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, you become from friend to enemy very quickly,
very
right?
Very quickly, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Okay. So what we are going to talk about in the next kind of section, I'll say, of okay. our podcast today mm-hmm. is about conflict styles in relationships. And this one is called the Four Horsemen, which is interesting, approaches of negative interaction. And understanding these patterns can help couples navigate disagreements more constructively. So here are the five main conflict styles. So thinking about How do you have conflict? How do you talk about your conflict? Because sometimes just vocalizing our needs and our wants can cause a conflict.
Yes.
Especially if we kind of have a feeling of how, sorry, how our partner receives that. I'm just thinking about the conflict right now in my relationship.
I know. I'm going through little things in my past as well. Saying even just getting to that point can be a conflict.
So one that has come up many, many times previously is golf. I don't know why I'm bringing this up.
Okay.
But golf, the time for me, the time spent golfing, that's a lot. It's a big time commitment, mm-hmm. especially those that are really into it.
Yeah.
So evenings and weekends and all summer it's golf. And I'm just like, what is going on? What about family time or this and that? So golf is an example that I might use in terms of conflict. And cause it's kind of funny now that I'm past it, that I think about it now, because it caused some, issues in my relationships before.
Oh, okay.
okay. Take a breath here. So actually maybe we'll just take a little breath. That's one way to slow down the thinking and the body. Okay, so five main conflict styles. So based on assertiveness, which means satisfying your own needs, and cooperativeness, satisfying the needs of our partners, individuals typically lean into one of these five styles. So just thinking about this for a second, I just want to kind of really highlight this. So the assertiveness is needed to satisfying your own needs, which means that you need to have a certain level of power and directiveness and openness and honestness about this is what I need for my well-being.
And not just with your partner, with yourself.
Yeah.
With yourself first and foremost, right?
Yes.
And that gives you a little more power to share.
To vocalize
it.
Yes.
Okay.
So you need to be sure, the surety mm-hmm. in yourself, yeah. not doubting yourself in that way. And then the cooperativeness, which is satisfying your partner's needs. So cooperation, and compromise, maybe I'll talk, I understand a little bit more about the compromise, which is sometimes where both people are, the best way to say it is when both are equally kind of happy and unhappy is an idea for compromise.
Okay.
The cooperation is satisfying your partner's needs is, I guess, how can you be accommodating and help them to meet their needs? Because it's still an individualistic situation. Right? Like they need to know what their needs are and how they're going to get them. That does not turn into your role of understanding what their needs are and helping them to get there. Right? It's really up to that person to figure that out. And right. I think so that's a healthy thing to understand about you, yourself and your partner. I think sometimes where we get it a little bit confused is where we can shut down our own needs and prioritize our partner's well-being. Which happens a lot in people that have codependency issues and people-pleasing tendencies. Yeah.
Okay. And again, avoiding conflict, right?
Yes. Especially for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd rather not open that can of worms. We'll just do what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. So that way you're happy. And then if you're happy, that hopefully means that I'm happy.
That's right. If your partner's happy, then I'll be happy too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Very true.
Okay. So the five main conflict styles, competing. Is the first one. Let's look at that.
Yes. Okay. So this is the image of a shark.
Okay.
So competing, high assertiveness, low cooperation. Okay. The goal is to win arguments at all costs. And this approach can lead to quick decisions, but may also cause hurt feelings and resentment. So I think a lot of people think people that might have this conflict style, and even if you take it outside of relationships and into workplace, right? And friendships, right?
Yeah.
They must know what they want and what they're doing because they can just make decisions really, really quickly. And then they always want to be right. Okay. So very, very strict guidelines or strict boundaries, I'd say. Not a lot of fluidity. Accommodating. So this is the image of a teddy bear. Okay, so they have low assertiveness, high cooperation. So a little bit about what I was kind of mentioning before. And a person using this style prioritizes their partner's needs to maintain harmony. and this is often at the expense of their own. Over time, this can lead to unmet needs and suppressed frustration. This is me sometimes. I know that some people might not believe it, but this is definitely me sometimes. Okay, avoiding the turtle. Low assertiveness and low cooperation. Individuals using this style sidestep conflict entirely, hoping it will resolve itself magically. While it can diffuse the immediate tension, it can also cause small issues to fester into bigger problems. Okay, so if you imagine just a turtle kind of going in and hiding in its shell, right?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and avoiding, it's almost like pull into themselves, shut everybody off.
That's right.
And when they come back, it's kind of the same problems again.
It is.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, it is. Compromising the fox. So a fox would have moderate assertiveness and moderate cooperation. This approach involves finding a middle ground where both partners get part of what they want. While a common and practical solution, it may not fully address either person's concerns. So it's there's a lot of communicating that has to happen to kind of get this understood by both partners. And the next one here is the owl, collaborating. High assertiveness, high cooperation. The most effective style, this involves working together to find a win-win solution that fully satisfies both partners. It requires time and emotional energy, but leads to deeper understanding and stronger connection. So I just want to take a moment and will kind of notice yourself in these different animals?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. In fact, I can almost identify with different ones, different types along my journey, and also people I interact with. And almost the fact where, the fox is something where I'd use on a more community-based approach. And then the owl, collaborating, is more in a personal one-to-one with my partner.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's kind of how I kind of see that. Mm-hmm. And it's almost, again, like you kind of growing. If you identify as a shark, then it's like, all right, need a little work.
Yeah.
Right? Because even though you're getting results, it's not fully results for everyone.
For everybody.
Right? For everybody involved. Right. So I think, again, along my healing and my journey that I've been through, I can identify with all of this stuff. And again, it's almost the point where, okay, yeah, I can see myself. I started off, I kind of came off as a shark, right?
Mm-hmm.
First off, and then I was a little more accommodating. Not so much accommodating that one, but I think it's the low assertiveness that really identified with the accommodating one, where I really, again, didn't know who I was or what I wanted, what I needed.
Right.
So it's like, oh, guess what? Yeah, what do you need? Oh, and even looking back now in my career, it was what the company always wanted, what the station always wanted, not so much what my personal goal as a broadcaster wanted, right?
Totally.
And now it's like totally opposite now.
Yeah.
Right. So,
and I, like I said, if you change these, I like how you change them into like where they kind of fit in your life in different places, mm-hmm. relationship wise, work wise, or within the community. I think a lot of times that, the shark, the competitiveness, which is high assertiveness, low cooperation, that's really used a lot in organizations and businesses, right? Where it's just results, task, execution. And so it really leaves out, there needs to be some recognition. And I actually always think that even when you have a workplace and an environment that is actually more along the lines of maybe the owl, right? High assertiveness, high cooperation. I think that's where you have the best kind of results from your work in your organization. And I've worked at different places throughout my life. And I used to live in BC. And there I worked for a big name coffee company for almost 8 years. And that was a lot of what they talked about and approached, especially earlier on. This was quite a while ago that I worked there. And so their kind of foundational stages when they were building this organization were about, we're in the people business, serving coffee was our mantra. And so what that meant was not only did the people that you're serving matter, what mattered was the people that are in your organization.
Okay.
So their success, their humanistic success, helped to make the business stronger and helped you to grow your sales and helped you to grow your customer loyalty and all of those things. So if you have a bunch of employees, and I think we've been in those places, we've shopped from those places. When you have a lot of employees who are just not happy, you really are not going to buy more. You're probably not going to want to enter into that place very much because it's you feel the drain, you feel the heaviness.
Yeah.
And
you don't even have to be an empath to feel it.
yeah, you don't. But I think, they understood and they did a lot of research as a company to understand that. So as a store manager there, I had to go through a lot of different trainings to understand what the heck are you guys talking about? Because it was new to me. I was like, what do you mean our employees? I shouldn't say it like that, but what do you mean we matter and our employees matter and our work-life balance matters? Because this was 20 years ago, around there. So that was very new, new kind of
cutting edge.
It was. Yeah. And so, but I bought into it, of course, being a person who cares about people, I was like, yeah, okay, this is good. And so what I saw was the more that I invested in that high cooperation and high assertiveness, kind of mapping out what the bottom line, I guess, expectations were of the organization, and then having a high cooperation in what is it that you need to be successful here at our place of work. I would like you to be successful. I'd like you to be happy. I wouldn't say that in those words, but in a general sense is what you need. And oftentimes it was always about, how can we balance our work with the needs that they have at home? And so a lot of people would not really lean into this type of discussion. I guess that's why I became a social worker as I am now, because again, this was one of my first big careers. And so I started to understand how I needed to engage people enough to understand them to get their needs met in terms of our work. So one of the things that I really enjoyed doing was just understanding, well, what is your home life like? What's going on with you? A lot of times we had different students. We had people that were retired. We had moms that, had kids at home.
Okay.
And so all I could really do was kind of help them and give them a schedule that worked with them. And so, they always had this idea of, we need to have a certain amount of opening shifts and closing shifts covered. And, a person would need to work from 5:30 AM to 11 o'clock in the evening. And so, yeah, I'm like, how does that work for a human being?
Yeah,
right?
That's a tough one.
No. So I just decided to kind of scrap that a little bit. And I would say, okay, what is it that you'd like to work? And the mom who had, kids in school would like to work, 5:30 in the morning to 1 o'clock in the afternoon, 5 days a week. And I'm like, are you serious? And she said, yeah, that would really help me. That would give me that work-life balance. And the students who, would be studying till midnight, 1 o'clock, we're like, yes, please. I don't want to have any 5:30 AM shifts. Just give me all the night shifts. And I'm like, really? Okay. And then there were some people that didn't have anything to do during the day that really wanted to work those day shifts, because this was kind of like their full-time job. So they were happy working, 8 to 4. So I just had to understand what people's needs were and how I could meet them and then just give them, that type of balance. And in the end, it was just magical how people would come into work happy.
Oh, right.
They would be happy because all the stuff on their mind wasn't there. And they were happy because they got to be with their kids when they needed to. They got to do their studies and they would come into work happy. And then everything else just fell into place. Mm-hmm. Everything else was able to be executed for the most part.
Each of their lives was nice little mechanical pieces rolling fine.
It was. Yeah, very interesting. Hey, I'm not saying that this is going to work in every workplace, of course.
And not every workplace works like that either. You're very lucky to find one like that. Yeah. Doing shift work and working for many different companies before I got into radio, mm-hmm. I understand that. Like I did the currying, mm-hmm. in the mm-hmm. city, did bartending, you mm-hmm. know, late mm-hmm. night bartending. And that, again, that was a totally different, I did that for like 6 months. And then the elders came and said, no, don't work there, bud. Mm-hmm. Don't go work in that bar. Go get something else. Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, I'll go on my way then.
Exactly. And a lot of times in that case, it's almost like, in my perspective, if you find something that you like doing and mm-hmm. you like and who you like doing it with, mm-hmm. that's the best equation right there.
I would agree.
You could love what you're doing, but the people who are around aren't the greatest, and mm-hmm. it weighs down on you.
Mm-hmm.
The total opposite is if you like the people you work with, but you don't like that work doing, then again, mm-hmm. it's not going to go forward, right?
Totally. Yeah, you bring up another great point, and I hate to keep using this example, but there's so many things that I pull from that period of time in my life.
Sure.
The other part being that I understood what people like to do and what they didn't like to do. Of course, there's things that we have to do.
Yes.
Like punch our clock.
Yes.
Do our mm-hmm. time cards.
Actually have to go to work to pay the bills. Yeah. Right? Definitely. That's the first and foremost thing is why people hate working is because I have to.
Yeah.
Right? Not
yeah.
because they like to. Mm-hmm. Not because they have to work to get the money to pay the bills.
Right.
First and foremost.
Yes.
Right? But then you have the lucky individuals who enjoy what they do
mm-hmm.
in that environment.
So what I would learn is there were obviously working in a customer-orientated place, mm-hmm. you do have to be able to somewhat engage with customers.
Yes.
Right. So, of course, I knew that there were some people that it's not their favorite thing. They'll do it and they won't do it terribly, but I just know that it's not their most favorite thing to do. And they have a certain type of, I guess, clientele that they like to engage with, more introverted oh, okay. type of clientele, right? Mm. So again, I would think about that and I'd consider that. And I worked at, I think, 5 or 6 different stores during my 8 years with this organization. So I was always moving to underperforming stores to get them into performing stores.
Okay.
So what I learned was that, okay, those that are more the introverted, right? If I have to do inventory, they would love to work that shift for 8 hours. They would love it. And so why am I going to give somebody who's great, who just wants to talk their whole shift, the inventory shift? Never. Mm-hmm. No. Hell no. Because yep. not only that, they're talkers, so they're not going to really get it done.
I was just going to say that. It's because they'll be angry, ugly, and they're not going to get anything done either.
And this is honestly what would happen sometimes, because people assume that high talkers and communicators are really great at everything. And that's not true. They might say that they're great because they just are talking, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're great at all these things. So they would put maybe somebody who's perceived as high performing into something like counting because they think that they're going to do it well. And that's not the case. The person who wants to pay attention to detail is actually going to do a better job.
That's right.
So that's how I would kind of learn to understand what did people like. And there were some people that really actually liked cleaning. They liked the cleaning shifts. They were like, okay, I'm grabbing my bucket and I'm going away for, you know, 2 of the 4 hours. I'm like, alrighty, have fun.
Okay. Yeah.
And there was somebody like, I don't want to clean the bathroom. Please, like, I would rather do, you know, the shelves, the merchandise.
Inventory. Yeah. The inventory, clean the bathrooms. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So again, it's just engaging with what they like, giving them those things more than the things that they don't like. And that just supports them in their wellness, right? Mm-hmm. So again, that's kind of like that high assertiveness, high cooperation. And oftentimes because I'd give them those tasks that they like to do, I wouldn't have to really micromanage them because the job would be done really well. I'd be like, man, that is sparkling. Or, wow, there were no errors on our inventory. So all these things fall into place magically mm-hmm. when you have that high cooperation with your people that you're working with.
And also morale goes up. Mm-hmm. And if you're in a bind that you need somebody to fill something that somebody doesn't like to do it, they'll say, well, okay, I'll do it this time.
Yes.
Because they won't say, oh, I'm doing this all the time. It's like, well, I haven't done that in a while. Okay, I'll help you out. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. The high cooperation becomes reciprocal back and forth. So I think, I know that this might sound like a magical place that I'm talking about. It really was. Like, it really was the best time in my career and in my work life that I was able to experience all those things. And so I try to bring them out into different places to talk about how they can be used in relationships and in the workplace and different things like that, because it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's it's not hard to imagine. Like, we're talking about relationships, not only how they become, how they build, how they grow, but also how you can change. Mm-hmm. And once you find something that works, either works at home or works in the office, you can apply that to either or, mm-hmm. to the rest of your relationships in your life, right? Because mm-hmm. that's what it really comes down to is what I found it is not so much what I think or what I perceive, it's how I react.
Yes.
It's all about how I react to whatever situation is. I can, like I said, we've talked before how I can use my energy or you can use your energies for whatever you want, mm-hmm. right? Whether you want to do it in a positive way or mm-hmm. you want to take it in a negative way or you just want to sit back and not even take part, mm-hmm. right? In my path, that's the way I can gauge some things. But a lot of the times too, it's almost like if I come across something in the past that works and then it can suddenly comes into this say situation, like I can apply that past situation to this situation, just by starting it calms everybody down. And mm-hmm. then again, so you're not so much, you need a little bit of assertiveness, but also a little cooperation in presenting that idea. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And of course it also depends on the other person's relationship and what attitude they're in. But mm-hmm. if they're willing, then it's a matter of just coming to a proper little joint in time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. Yep. And there was another way to view it. And I don't know if they still have this training, but one of them was called situational leadership. And basically it was very cool to understand this kind of dynamic.
Okay.
But basically what they talked about was assessing the readiness of the learner. And so I don't have it written down here. This is just coming from my brain. Okay. Basically what they taught was, when you ask somebody to do something, and this is employee focused, but I think it can be relationship focused as well. You have to gauge the readiness. So number one, have they done this before and do they know how to do it? Because I don't know how many times I've asked somebody in my relationship or in any situation. I'm just laughing because I need to remember these things. Have they done this before? Have they had secure attachment communication before? Do they know what it looks like? Or am I asking something like, you know, come with me to Mars and drive the rocket ship there, right? Mm-hmm. So,
yep.
And a lot of people might not be able to say, no, I don't. I don't know what you're talking about, Christy.
That blank look that comes back to say, oh, okay, now I know where you are, right?
Yes. And then the next one is... the willingness, which is, are they willing to do it? Do they want, is this something that they want to do or that they don't want to do? And that is all up to the individual.
Yes.
Like that, I have no control over.
That's right.
Yeah. They either want to or they don't. So that's going to take you to the next next thing is, are they willing to learn? And so are they, and that again comes from how they respond, how they vocalize it. They might not know how to do it. They might not have done it before. But they might be willing to try and learn and open. That's all that you need, mm-hmm. right? Is that willingness. But conversely or oppositely, you might have that they've never done it before. They don't know what it looks like, but they might not be willing to do it. And that might be a boundary that you might get to navigate. And then again, that's up to that individual, right?
Yeah.
But sometimes I think we jump very quickly to conclusions, which is they might say, blank stare, no. They might take their time and be confused because they're thinking and they're afraid to say that I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And then you jump to, well, they don't want to do it. They don't want to support me. They don't want to try this with me. I'm here all out in this all by myself. And I guess sometimes it's important to again try to take that breath. Mm-hmm. Try to take that step back,
yeah,
and understand, you know, ask those questions like, have you done this before? Do you know what it looks like? Maybe you both don't really know what it looks like, but you might have heard something today that kind of sparks a little bit of research within yourself and maybe sharing with your partner, like, how do we have a secure communication style where we can both feel like we can describe our needs and our wants and our desires, not feel reactive or feeling like we're being attacked, like we're doing something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just starting those kind of first few steps into it, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always like, I don't want to be cautious of, but listen, when you ask, listen, Mm-hmm. Right. Take a few minutes, take a few seconds just to wait. Because, again, looking back, I've been there.
Where I'm like, we both have ADHD. What are you talking about, man?
It's like I remember saying something, whether it be in anger, whether it be in rushed, but not waiting for the response and saying, oh, fine then, and walking away, right? And then actually physically saying, oh, that person, hold on, sweet. Give me a second.
Can I breathe?
Let me breathe. Let me respond. Then I say, oh. Oh, okay. And then realizing, oh, yeah, I just turned away, not even realizing that I didn't even get the chance to respond. Mm-hmm. And then the response was like, huh, right? It was a breakthrough moment. So if I hadn't stopped and listened, then that resentment, well, would turn into resentment. And then that, I guess, that relationship would be damaged. Mm-hmm. Right? And not, I wouldn't say irreparable, mm-hmm. but it'd be a hurdle that you'd both have to get over again, mm-hmm. right? And that's the worst part. And again, I respect everybody on the personal journey. And that's the worst thing is having to go back after you've flamed out on somebody mm-hmm. and going back and say, okay, I'm sorry. I was in the wrong state of mind. I shouldn't have said that. Nah, 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 nah. That's mm-hmm. that was part of my healing journey. That was the worst part. Yeah. And it was actually, I guess, the thing that pushed me forward because I didn't want to experience that again.
Yeah.
Then going back and having to rebuild that bridge mm-hmm. that in anger, in confusion, or whatever the case may be, mm-hmm. right? It mm-hmm. Just let my emotions go.
mm-hmm. Totally. Right? Yeah. And it's, these things that we're talking about can be very, very triggering for people. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to be vulnerable.
It is. And I think that's the hardest part is accepting that you're feeling vulnerable, mm-hmm. right? Because that's the test point mm-hmm. of your journey is when you're feeling those that vulnerability, but you still want to engage.
Yeah. Right. And so I think that's that direct link to childhood, which is that feeling vulnerable. Feeling, because you know, it's hard to feel vulnerable. It's hard to feel like you need something, especially when the world around you always denied you of that, right? Yeah. And acknowledge that. And so, when you put yourself back into that state of feeling vulnerable, and you go to your partner with that feeling, and you're being dismissed again, you know, it can be very, very hurtful. And I suppose that, you know, in terms of if I put myself in the position of the partner, which is how do you reflect, acknowledge, or understand when your partner is feeling vulnerable? How do you acknowledge that? How do you lean into it rather than shy away from it if it's not something that you acknowledge within yourself, I guess? Oh, yeah. Does that make sense?
A lot of sense.
Yeah. So if you're very stiff and independent and somebody's coming at you with their vulnerabilities, you could be like, I don't know what to do. I'm not used to this, right?
Well, it can
be
a bit scary. Yeah, because they've never looked into themselves that way, mm-hmm. right? So they already have that boundary up kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And if their caregiver was dismissive, right? Oh, you'll figure it out. Oh, man, I hate that. I hate when I hear that. And I've probably said that too to people, right? So it's not about perfection. It's about progress, I guess.
Yes, that's right. It's never too late. Mm-hmm. You can always turn things around. So we got some information from the Gottman Institute's framework with relationship researchers. Now, this is where we get into the four toxic behaviors. The four horsemen.
Okay. Yeah.
And I guess there's the different relationships that I'm not sure. I don't know if I want to go any, if I want to empathize any of these or say, yeah, that's us. I hope not.
Yeah. This is in relationship to couples and how they can, how this conflict style can predict a relationship's failure. And again, if we try to reverse it into, to me, knowledge is power.
Yes.
So if I know what's causing the conflict in my relationship, if I know it, I have a little definition of it, I feel like I'm more powerful than any set of words that are on paper.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. So my love, my intention, my belief in myself, my belief in my partner, we might have these things wrong on paper. Doesn't mean that we can't reverse them and do the opposite get some success in the relationship, right?
Yeah. It's almost like this is why it's happening.
This is why it's happening,
yeah.
Right? And then we'll talk a little bit about how we can get out of that if we're struggling with this in our relationships. And I think we're going to find ourselves in these because, of course, you know, it's not, we don't have a lot of opportunities to understand healthy relationships. We don't get the, it doesn't get taught in schools, didn't get taught into at school until I was like in university, right? So my whole life I'm just winging it, not understanding what a healthy relationship is, right? All right. So functional styles of conflict, volatile couples. So these partners engage in passionate, loud arguments, but balance them with high levels of positive emotion. They are open with their feelings and can resolve issues despite the intensity. So this is like, yeah, I'm thinking about this from my youth, okay. My youth days. Okay.
Oh, I remember when.
Highly emotional, right? Like, yeah. Highly, highly emotional. And then the difficulty is when it's not highly passionate in this way and they're just in a coasting type of stage, they might feel insecure in the relationship because it's like, where's the passion? Oh, you don't love me anymore. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, my voice is replaying in my head. Don't love me anymore.
We're not going 100 miles per hour. What's wrong? Yeah. What's going on? Was it me? Is it me? Did I do something?
Oh, boy. Okay. So how do we find in this one, how do we find more moments, I guess, of homeostasis, balance, and get comfortable with quiet times? You know, that can be actually kind of scary for some folks, right? That are used to the high intensity relationships. Validating couples. So these partners handle conflict calmly and maturely, respecting each other's opinions and compromising easily. They validate each other's feelings even when they disagree. So I think that the issue here is yes, it's important to validate each other's when they disagree, but how do you still come with compromise? How do you still come up with a solution? It's like that. What is that saying? It's almost a dismissive type of statement. We can agree to disagree.
Okay.
Right. And in a relationship, there might be some things that you can't agree to disagree. Kinda. Right. Like if you're going to stay together or not.
Yeah. When you say that, agree to disagree, it's almost like we're going to put that on hold for now.
Yes.
That's what comes to me.
Yeah.
And he says, well, when it comes back, we're going to deal with that again. But for now, we're just going to put it on hold. Okay, fine. Agreed, compromised, put it away for now.
Yeah.
But again, it didn't really get down to the bottom of it.
Right? Yeah, it de-escalated in the moment, but yes. We didn't get to the meat and potatoes of it.
It's almost like a people-pleasing person would do that,
mm-hmm.
Right? Just to get that conflict away so we can move on.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And always validating, which means if you're always validating, even if you're in disagreement, how does that engage in growth in relationships? Like, right. How do we encourage each other to grow? There was this little reel that I saw about, and of course I see a lot of them because of the work that I do, but it was a reel about therapy and therapists, and this therapist was stating, like, in her line of work, that she wasn't going to be complicit, is how she vocalized it, when her clients tell her things that are traumatic and triggering and wrong, that she would kind of express them. You'd see expression in her face, right? About, like, that's shocking. Like, I'm, you know, acknowledging what somebody has gone through rather than being complicit, which is just kind of stone facing, which a lot of therapists or teachings are more like, you've got to be calm and regulated. Right. And so if somebody tells you something that's triggering, you know, it's good that you're not, that you kind of maintain a certain amount of professional composure.
Okay.
But at the same time, you know, how does that, how is that received if somebody's just told you something, if you've just shared something triggering and the person's like, must be difficult. You know,
okay, yeah,
you're
yeah.
kind of like, mm-hmm. hold on a second.
Yeah, I just shared something really big and you haven't and even, you even got, blinked an eye.
Are you, you know, do you got a pulse? Are you okay over there?
Yeah, okay.
Conflict avoiding couples. So these couples minimize or avoid conflict, agreeing to disagree, right? They tend to focus on positive aspects and may not confront underlying issues. So again, we kind of talked about that, right? Like, how do you get to the underlying deep-rooted issues, which can be very scary because, we're afraid. You know, we're afraid to get to those deep-rooted because a lot of them are very much core beliefs. Dysfunctional styles and behaviors. Hostile couples. So this is a dysfunctional style characterized by defensiveness and withdrawal. These partners engage in destructive patterns like the Four Horsemen. These are communication patterns that, according to Gottman, are highly predictive of divorce. Criticism, attacking your partner's character rather than specific behavior, that is the problem. So I think that, you know, the reason why communicating or learning how to communicate effectively is important, because sometimes you just know something's wrong and you're just trying to talk it out, but you don't know how to articulate it kind of well enough, but you just know something's bothering you. So you're just vocalizing whatever kind of comes to mind first and foremost.
Right.
And so sometimes it's like, it's you, it's your, you know, how you were raised, or, you know, how you, instead of it being, cause that is an attack for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's, if you take it off the person and talk about the behavior, and you morph out of the attack and into what is the actual problem. I don't feel like you're reacting to me or calling me enough. And sometimes that makes me feel like I'm not important enough and into your life. So it's more about the behavior, because once you talk about the behavior, it gives both people an opportunity to make some changes. So if we're talking about the phone and the importance of the phone and importance in somebody's life, that can be something that can be easily fixed, right? It's like, huh, I didn't even realize that me being on my phone too much made you feel that way. I can do my part, which is use my phone less, but can you do your part in understanding that your importance doesn't interface with the phone? Does that make sense?
Yep.
So it becomes a little bit of both of the partners' work.
Partner A is thinking that the phone is more important than me, mm-hmm. but partner B is saying, no, you are not more important than my phone, but my phone needs to be watched every so often.
Yes. Right? Yeah. Exactly. Or yeah.
Certainly along that. Like, again, compromise.
Yes. Right? Sorry, you said it backwards, I think.
So partner B doesn't realize that when he's on the phone, it's taking away time from partner A.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
And the compromise is, B is going to put the phone down a little more, but A has to realize that.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
A little compromise.
Yeah.
A has to realize that B can't be in your face all the time. Right? Yes. Like, B might be a doctor and that phone they have to look at that phone. Mm-hmm. Or in your case, or a therapist. Mm-hmm. And like even my wife's case, she's mm-hmm. a frontline social worker.
Mm-hmm.
And there could be a call that says, we need you to come down and help this.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So in my point, it's like, we have our time. Mm-hmm. But if that phone rings and you look at it and you have that look on your face, okay, I know it's important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? That's my recourse.
Yes.
That's the way I I make amends for it.
Yep.
Like I know when she's on. I know when somebody's on the phone just scrolling or laughing. Okay. I know I could talk about something more important.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
when that phone goes off and that look on your face.
Like, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
okay. I'm gonna let you deal with that.
Yeah. It's because a crisis situation.
That's your gig. That's what you need to do. And if it's not important, then you'll come back.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. I'm getting you.
A little more. Okay.
Okay. And then, where did we go here?
Contempt.
So contempt.
We did criticism. Okay. Contempt.
Contempt. Okay. So intentionally treating your partner with disrespect through sarcasm, mockery. Mm-hmm. Eye rolling or name calling. And this is considered the most toxic of the four.
I can see that. Yeah.
And we can totally see that, right? So sarcasm, I just might pull that out just for a moment. Sarcasm is, it doesn't seem very toxic.
I think
there's
a right place for sarcasm.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I guess it depends on that intentionality.
Especially in the native culture, we're very, not sarcastic, but comical in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Like not degrading, just to bring everybody in a better mood kind of thing, right? And if you're not in that frame of mind, you could probably take that the wrong way.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Name calling, that's very, very toxic. And, you know, I know it's hard when we're feeling hurt, but if these are some things that you can commit to yourself for your own self-worth and value, that even when things get hard, I'm not going to revert to these types of behaviors, right? If you could just do that for yourself, it's going to help you to not have to pull the relationship out of such trenches. If we could just kind of draw a line for ourselves, which I'm not going to call my partner names. I'm not going to degrade them. I'm not going to mock them. And I'm also not going to bring up things that I know is hurtful for them, even if I feel like I'm being triggered in that way. Because if you're so triggered where you need to go to those defenses, is this the right healthy relationship for you?
Right.
Right. All right. The next one is defensiveness. So when feeling criticized, you respond by making excuses or shifting blame instead of taking responsibility. I think that happens a lot, right? We can make excuses, shifting blame instead of taking responsibility for what's ours. Again, taking responsibility for what's ours and them taking responsibility for what belongs with them. Stonewalling. Withdrawing from the conversation by shutting down or physically leaving. It is often a response to feeling overwhelmed or flooded. That is me. I am a stonewaller.
Oh, yes. Yep. For the longest time, that was my go-to.
Mm-hmm.
Any kind of conflict or any, or if there was a, something happening in a certain environment, mm-hmm. instead of me engaging improperly or engaging in something that I want to have no control of, mm-hmm. I just stand up. And I walk away,
mm-hmm.
stand up and just get out of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And people in my circle kind of understood that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, Will's getting up and leaving. Oh, okay. All right.
He'll
be back. Yeah.
Okay.
He'll be back. But for now he's okay. Good. Go out there and yell, go out there and let it out and then come back in a better frame. That's what I see. Like, mm-hmm. There's something like I can't handle it or I have no control of it, mm-hmm. or I'm scared of how I'm going to react.
Mm-hmm.
And I either just withdrawn to my own mind,
mm-hmm.
it's a meeting or whatever the case may be, or I physically stand up and I walk out of the room,
mm-hmm.
just because it's just too much. Mm-hmm. It's too much. I have to get out, clear my mind.
Yes.
And then come back in.
Yes, absolutely. In. Very good. I think that's a healthy thing to do, especially if you're not ready to engage in the conversation.
And I guess that's a positive way of looking at stonewalling.
Yeah.
As opposed to a negative.
Yeah.
It is. I guess it can be taken either way because it could be taken as a negative aspect. But mm-hmm. in my case, I used it just to get out of that situation.
Mm-hmm. And I guess in the negative way, I'll just, because this is something that I have to remember for myself too, is when I stonewall and walk away, and if my partner struggles with abandonment, what information are they receiving that I'm abandoning them when the times are getting difficult, which I've done before and I've had it done to me. So I guess I'm kind of seeing both sides of that, right? Which is, dang it, no, I'm not abandoning you. I just need to calm down and take a moment to breathe because I might say something that I don't want to say or I'm not ready to understand it yet. So even if I guess we're vocalizing a little bit of that, so that way our partner doesn't feel like they're being abandoned at their worst time when they're being vulnerable and vocalizing how they feel about something.
Okay.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
A different kind of view of, mm-hmm. of what you had mentioned.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And again, from my point of view, I didn't realize that.
Right.
How the people felt after I left.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because it happened once, I guess. I'm thinking more of a public meeting, persona kind of thing, as opposed to this personal
relationship.
One-on-one.
Okay, gotcha.
It has happened one-on-one before, but mm-hmm. not, I guess it didn't happen as often.
Mm-hmm.
But when it did, it was like, oh,
mm-hmm.
right. That's when I realized, okay,
mm-hmm.
I had to walk away from it.
Yeah.
And then I came back in a better frame of mind.
Yeah.
But not realizing the questions after I walked out of the room,
mm-hmm.
like, what's going on? Where is it going? What's going on? What's happened? Did I say something? It's like,
right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, for sure.
Okay. All right. So we've identified some pretty abrasive relationships. Like,
we're all like, that's me.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Me.
Yeah.
This is not an attack to the listeners.
Quietly. Did I say that loud? Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. It always comes back. I got to check on this, but there's a fable of two seagulls. It's two certain types of seagulls. I know this, we're going long. It's going to be a long episode right now. Here we go. There's a fable where you have two different types of seagulls. There's a certain type that are flyers,
uh-huh.
and certain types who are growers.
Okay.
And if you have two flyers, they will fly and they will fall and they will fall and they will just spiral because they're the same type of personalities.
Mm-hmm.
And unless one breaks,
mm-hmm.
they will plummet to their death, mm-hmm. and they'll die together.
Wow.
Right? So in I guess in your relationship, it's great to find that person that you can identify with, that mm-hmm. you have that relationship with,
mm-hmm.
and you can soar together, but you also realize that you have to slow down.
Yeah.
You know, one of you has to be an adult every so often. Right? Yeah. And that is true.
Really
that
powerful.
Is true. That is true. Mm-hmm. Because if you're both kids running through the forest naked, you're going to get into trouble. Yeah. Someone has to be the adult. Okay, hold on. Let's take a break. Put some clothes on.
Very nice.
Okay, so if you identified with some of these relationships, how can you turn it around?
Yeah, so here, we're going to talk a little bit about how can we improve our conflict style. So number one, identify your patterns. Recognizing your own and your partner's tendencies is the first step towards changing them. Shift from competing to collaborating. So instead of trying to win, focus on finding a solution that works for the both of you. Mm-hmm. Again, that takes a lot of emotional time and energy and effort to do that. Yeah. Replace criticism with complaints. So frame your concerns around your feelings about a specific behavior rather than attacking your partner's character.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Practice emotional regulation. If you feel yourself or your partner becoming overwhelmed, take a break to calm down and reset before resuming the discussion.
I think that's important too.
Yeah.
Right?
What we talked about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
same. Like we're both triggered. Let's just take a breath here.
Whether you're ADHD or not.
Right.
Because you can only absorb so much. And when it gets to a certain point, you're turning more stuff away than accepting more stuff in.
Yep. And then seek professional help. So for deeply entrenched or destructive patterns, a couples therapist can provide guidance and tools to help navigate conflict in a healthier way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're going to draw this amazing podcast to a close with another excerpt from Brianna Wiest in her book called Ceremony. Okay.
Okay.
Just take a moment here. Okay. The ones who cannot meet your soul where it is are the ones who will walk you to where you are meant to be. One day you will have to reinvent yourself outside of the shadow of what everyone else has asked you to be. You will have to ask yourself who you are if you had no obligation to anyone else. You will have to explore who you would become if you knew you were completely free, if you knew you would not be judged, if you knew that all the things you ever desired were simply on the other side of you stepping into who you already are, taking the essence of your soul and turning it into form. If our conversations spurred some questions and you'd like to talk, you can reach me at 306-216-0040. 306-216-0040.